each and every one of you, and I'm glad you're here, glad you're able to be here. And we are continuing in our study, you know, the walking on our own two feet. And we're talking about, you know, the ideal of adding from 2 Peter 1, 4 through 10. And you probably picked it up from the scripture that I give Andy this morning to read. We are on godliness. And the passage that I got him to read there in 2 Timothy 3, you know, verse 5 said, you know, the first part there, verse 5 said, a form of godliness. And the more I study godliness here, and I told Deanna, you know, I mentioned this morning Bible class that I'm working on about a month's worth of lessons at once. And this one here was hard to finish. I told her, I said, yesterday, I said, I'm doing nothing but lessons the entire day. I said, that's all I'm working on. And I spent about 2 hours on this, and I said, I'm probably least satisfied on this one than any one I'm working on right now. And part of that is I just don't think I can present, you know, the magnitude of it well. I just don't. You know, and I think it's real easy for all of us to fall into the category of having a form of godliness and not truly having added unto ourselves godliness. But we've added unto ourselves a form of godliness. You know, and then Paul went on to record there to Timothy, trying to encourage him. And I got Andy to read that part, 10 through 17. The ideal of all the things that he endured, all the things that he suffered, all that he overcome, all the teachings, instructions, and everything. And then he says, you know, all those that live godly. And that's the point that he was driving home, was all these things that I did is part of that being godly, living godly. And we will endure a lot of things because of that. But it also what he's driving home is there to live a godly life, to have godliness. We will have to give up some things. We're going to have to change. We're going to have to do better. We're going to have to be, you know, a different individual. There's a lot that is entailed in godliness. So I'm going to do just like we've been doing, and I hope you've not got bored of sort of the word study part of that. But I think the only way for us to really understand what the word is, you know, the topic that we've got to add, is to know what it really means in the original language. If we don't know what it means, and we just take what it means in today's language, and that's why I always go to like our regular dictionary definition first, because this is the way the world thinks of it. But then we need to go and look and see actually what the word meant to the people that were writing it, recording it, and saying it. So hopefully, like I said, you've not got bored or upset about it, because we've done it each time, and we've still got four or five more I want to look at in this sense. But we got to understand what the Lord wants us to add. You know, He's not going to be pleased with us if we don't do what He's asked us to do. And if we don't understand what He's asked us to do and do it properly, then He's still going to be upset with us, because we have the ability to do that. Just plain old like dictionary.com definition of godliness. The quality of being devoutly religious or piety, conforming to the laws and wishes of God, devout, you know, pious. And the other part is coming from God, divine. So if you just take like a worldly understanding of godliness, they just say it's a quality of being devoutly religious, conforming to the laws and wishes of the, you know, God, you know, coming from God. And that's just sort of the general nature of it. Okay, it's just, you know, really, you know, wanting to serve God. You take His laws, you know you do those laws, and you follow through. You're devout in that work of God. There's a lot more to it than that. Like I said, you know, a lot of times when we take these words and we start trying to think about adding them to ourselves, that's about as far as we go with it. We get the world's definition of godliness. There's quite a bit more to that. Does this all apply? Yeah, it does. But there's a tremendous amount more to it than that. I started, you know, with Strong's. You know, that's always a good place to go. And I might bring the book, you know, next Sunday just to show you the big book I go to all the time. But there's two words for godliness. All right. And I thought, you know, hey, this would be, you know, fairly easy when I start this. The first one is 2150. Eusebia, Eusebia. And you also got to remember, when I write these letters out, some of these letters have very specific symbols to match up with the Greek as well. So, you know, sometimes even when I say it or try to pronounce what they give me the pronunciation of, I still destroy it. And y'all just have to forgive me of that. But you know, this word simply, you know, comes across as godliness or holiness. And I was thinking, well, you know, that's really not the best. But under this word, it says from, you know, the Greek word 2152. Eusebes. Eusebes. All right. And I was like, okay, well, that's well reverent, devout, godly. So we sort of got the worldly definition so far. But under that one, it said from 2095, EU or EUS, which is well or good. All right, so when we start taking godliness from this one word, eusebeia, the word itself is made up of multiple words that build from one another. All right, so the original root word is do well, do good, and then we add a little bit extra to that to go up to 52, the middle one. All right, so we're doing well, we're doing good, we're reverent, we're devout, we're godly. And then 2150, to get the full understanding of what godliness is, godliness and holiness. All right, so we got to go a little farther because there's another word that's used there as well. 2317, this is the one that's in 1 Timothy 2 and 10. Theosebia, T-H-E-O. S-E-B-I-A, and I'd spell these sometimes because of recording, like the recording on the mic if someone gets it. And that simply just says godliness again. You're like, okay, that doesn't help. But under it was two more words, and I've only got one on the screen, but the first one is 2318, which is just one down from it. Theosebias, it's a worshiper of God. So godliness is the ideal of being a worshiper of God. But then under that one, there's another one, and it just really is the root word there, theos, T-H-E-O-S, theos, the first, you know, little chunk there, T-H-E-O-S, theos, which is God, supreme deity, God, supreme deity. So if you take and back up from the root word and all the way up to where we are with 2317, it's the ideal of living, worshiping the supreme deity God. I mean, that's really what we need to take from that. So not just, you know, any kind of devout religiously. No, it's the ideal that we worship the God, the supreme deity God. Now, these are the Greek words. So we need to understand when we take that, you know, that rules out all their other Greek gods. This is the supreme deity, the God. And you worship him and him alone. And then we got to go back to the ideal of that godliness, because that's what is theosobia, you know, all the way back up to the top and talking about that living or doing well, reverent, devout, godly. That's the ideal of us taking and everything that we do is for him. And we're going to look at that a little more. I come up with this, and I thought it was a real interesting little chart. And I know it's hard to see. It took me quite a bit to get it because they wouldn't let me just take it as a copy it as a picture, but it's the time I transferred it a few times. It got a little fuzzy, but the use of godliness, like in everyday, just writing, you know, publications, whatever. This is from like a search in Google Books, like an in-gram viewer of it, like the times that they've got recorded, like books and when it pops up. If you go all the way back to like the 1800s, you know, like the number of times it would pop up throughout the years, like in writings, whatever it would be, whether it be book, articles, things that people wrote, whatever that recorded historically, it was used quite a bit. And then notice, though, as the years progressed, the ideal of really pushing, teaching, instructing, driving home the point of living, you know, a life full of godliness. By the time we got to the 1920s, 40s, 60s, we're starting to really bottom out. Notice this bottom line is zero for the year compared to it mentioned at all. That's zero. That's that bottom line is dead zero. 0.00000%. All right? Time we get down to the 20s, we are so low. I mean, this is just one time it's wrote and like thousands of things wrote. One time. And I mean, this is all the way down through 40s, 1960s, 80s. Now notice though, starting about 2000s coming up to us, it's actually making an arc. And I did have where I could see a little further and it was coming back up. That's at least a good thing. The idea that people are starting to push that a little more. But notice that huge dip. that out of all like the recordings, now that wouldn't be like religious articles that are not published in a magazine or something, that, you know, like an article that I would write. And say we put in like our little flyer in the back. It's not talking about those. You know, this would be published items. You know, that Google Books would have an inventory that they've gone through, published items. Near to nothing in that period of time. And that's sad. You know, but I think that does let us sort of understand why the world, you know, especially here in America, I guess we'd say, is getting worse and worse, right? If we could take and just sort of squeeze out the ideal of godliness to almost near nothing, then yeah, we can sort of just let people live however they want now, can't we? Because it's not being taught, it's not being published, it's not being publicized of needing to be a godly people in general. You know, moral values disappear. If you start taking away godliness, then you start taking away morals, period. So I just thought that was an interesting little thing. And that actually popped up when I put in godliness. It was a little chart under the bottom of it that you could take and search and look at. And I was like, wow, what a drop in the use of godliness. So godliness, like I said, it's doing well, it's doing good, it's being reverent, godly. Godliness, you know, but not in the likeness. We need to understand godliness is in the likeness of God. We need to understand it's really what it's putting, to be in God-like or likeness unto Him. But like I said, it's very clear that it's not the likeness of any God. Our God-likeness, and that's really how we need to understand what we need to add to ourselves, is the likeness of God. Has to be after the supreme deity, the only God. All right, so really what that boils down to is a worshiper of God in likeness unto Him. All right, so we can't just say, okay, I worship God. All right, you know, I give Him praise, I give Him glory. No, we are a worshiper of God as long as we are really talking about being in the likeness of Him. We are trying to make ourselves like Him. All right, and I'm going to show you, you know, scriptures that we have that prove that. You know, the first one I got to go to, Leviticus 20:26, God Himself saying, "And ye shall be holy unto me, for I, the Lord, am holy, and have severed you from other people, that ye should be mine." You know, you hear me talk about it all the time, the Lord saying, "Be ye holy as I am holy." This is the verse. This is the verse He's saying, and He's even pointing out that you've got to be like me. This is the God-likeness that we're talking about. When we talk about adding unto ourselves godliness or God-likeness, this is what we're talking about. Be ye holy as I am holy, and I have severed you or cut you out from really all the other people in the world so you can be mine. All the people in the world cannot be God-like. They don't have the instructions, especially this time, the instructions and everything else. Just people in general, they're not going to be God-like. But He's telling them, I have cut you out. I have taken you. I've separated you. I have taught you. I've instructed you. I've given you my laws. And ye must be like unto me. Now in the New Testament, it's still the same. Paul sort of makes that point. Be ye followers of me, even as I am of Christ. He's still driving that point home. Ephesians 5 and verse 1. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children. You know, that's the ideal of you know, that group that is separated out. We're called precious stones, living stones, a peculiar people, a separate people. You know, we're called all of these things because it's the same principle as Leviticus 20 unto the children of Israel. I have severed you from the world. I have cut you out. I have made a people that are to be like unto me. So be ye holy as I am holy. You know, and the ideal of Paul, you know, talking to be like Him because He's like Christ. He's saying, okay, you can follow my example because my example is as of Christ. That's what He was telling Timothy in the passage I got Andy to read there in 2 Timothy 3. He says, you take and you can be assured because of the one that told you even. He's talking about the ideal of the pattern that He's given him, the words, the instruction that He's given him, to take those and apply it and live a godly life. 1 Peter 3, beginning at verse 8, says, finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railings for railings, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. So see here this ideal of this separation, that this people that's sort of severed or cut out. We're different than the rest of the world. You know, Garrett made that point this morning, and you know, I talked about the lesson I got coming up on joy. But yeah, you know, he talks about some of the family he talks about and say, well, you have no fun. No, we do have fun. We have godly fun. We do the things of this life that God has created, made, that does bring pleasure and happiness and you know, and all these things. But we don't live like the world. We don't act like the world. We don't get entangled and snared in the acts of the world that they so-called call pleasure. But we are different. We are separate. And then we're going to continue right on in this same place here, all the way through verse 15. It said, for the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. And who is he that will harm you if ye be followers of that which is good? But, and if ye suffer for righteousness' sake, happy are ye. And be not afraid of their terror, neither be troubled, but sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. So see there, he talks about here's this group of people. We're not like them, but we are separate. We are different. And we are the Lord's, you know, and his eyes are on us. His ears are open to us. And if we serve him faithfully, you know, he's pleased with us. But if we don't, you know, he's going to take and punish us. And it says, always be ready to give that answer to every man. You know, Christ was always open and willing. Remember we talked about the Samaritan woman at the well? They brought the food and he says, no, you know, it's not the time for the food. There's a greater work to be done. Always be prepared. Be willing to teach. So if we start talking about this likeness of God and what we must add unto ourselves, this God likeness, we got to understand that there are some aspects of God that we can't add. You know, we don't have those abilities like the three that I've got here, omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient. Yeah, those are not qualities of God that we can have. Those are not God-likeness that we can add unto ourselves. We are not all-powerful. That's omnipotent. We're not everywhere at all time. We're not omnipresent. And we're definitely not omniscient, all-knowing. We cannot add that. We cannot obtain to that. That is, you know, aspects of being God. We cannot be that. Same thing with the ideal of being vengeful on the wicked. That is not our place. You know, the Lord says, vengeance is mine. I will repay. Vengeance is his. That's not something we add that God is capable of doing. God knows all things. So he can righteously deal out judgment. We cannot. That is not our place. It's not our place to think that we can be vengeful on the wicked. So yeah, that's not in the ideal of adding God likeness unto ourselves. That's out of the question. You know, those things right there. But there are a list of things about God that we know, and we're going to look at some verses here shortly. But some things that we truly can't add unto ourselves. And we've already talked about this first group, and that's being holy and righteous. Holy and righteous. You know, righteous just means doing what's right. Holy is doing what is holy, clean, pure, heavenly, those kind of things. You know, because God is holy. God is righteous. And just like we read there in Leviticus, you know, be ye holy as I am holy. He's telling you got to be like me. You got to be holy in this. We can add those things. We can be, you know, like unto God in that. As in what we think upon, you know, as in what we see, read, watch, you know, all of those things. All of those things that we dwell upon, all of those things need to be holy and righteous. We could go to Philippians 4, verse 8. Think on these things, you know, the pure and the holy and all those different things that's listed. The things that come out of our mouth should be holy, righteous, clean, just. Things, you know, things that we're a part of, things that we join ourselves unto, they need to be good things, holy things, righteous things. And then we've taken on that being or likeness of being holy and righteous unto God. But if we're a part of all kinds of things that's of the world, and that's what, you know, Brother Gary was mentioning this morning, you know, some of his family saying, well, that's the fun stuff. Yeah, then we're not holy. We're not righteous. And we're not living in a manner that has a God-likeness unto it. Another one is love. And actually, next Sunday, You know, if you take and go down our chart, we've got the ideal of brotherly love and charity, and I've actually combined those together because I think the only way you can understand brotherly love is to understand the love part that's at the end, and which is also charity. So we're going to combine those next week. But God is love. I like the way Brother Wayne mentioned, you know, at the Lord's table this morning, you know how could God take and send his son down? How could Christ take and suffer and die upon the cross? For one, as you know, he mentioned himself, but I can put myself in the same shoe. Every one of us can put ourselves in the same shoes. How could that be done for me? And the simple answer is just what Wayne says. He's come to that conclusion, and that's the only conclusion, is that they love us. They love us more than they love themselves. You know, the suffering, the pain, the sorrow, the separation. They love us, the sinner, the weak, the lowly, the created, more than anything else. Now, that ought to drive that home to you. When we start thinking about God-likeness, do we have that kind of love? And we're, like I said, next week, I'm not going to go into the whole lesson on love. We got that next week. It's pretty extensive and intense, love. To have the love that God has, the love that Paul describes in 1 Corinthians 13, that kind of charity, love, is extreme. But our God-likeness, if we're saying add unto ourselves godliness and being in the likeness of God, then this kind of love has to be added. The love that God would have to send his son down upon this earth for us the sinner, for his son to leave heaven, to come down as a man, to suffer and die upon this earth for the sinner, those that hate him, we have to have that same kind of love for everyone. Not a respecter of persons. And I think if you've got the love, you're not going to be a respecter of persons. God is not a respecter of persons. And like I said, I'm going to look at verses on quite a few of these topics here in just a minute. But yeah, you know, it's real easy in this life to be caught up in that. I mean, it's promoted in a way, publicized in a way, the ideal someone's better than somebody else. And I mean, it could be anything. It could be the amount of money someone's got, the amount of power or prestige, cause of the money. It could be, you know, fame, fortune. It could be anything. You know, on a lower level, maybe the color of your skin, your size, your build, man, female. I mean, you know, that's still a big thing. I know, you know, women's libs started, you know, what, back in the 60s, 70s, really started being promoted. That's far from being over with. I mean, far from it. I mean, it's to the point now, women don't want to be women at all. They want to be men. I mean, that's just what it boils down to. I want to be a man. You know, and I don't understand that. God made you what he made you for a purpose. You are made special in the sight of God. And why would you want to be us that was also made special in the sight of God? You are special in your own right. But, you know, there is the whole idea of being a respecter of persons. And I think those that are pushing women's lib and all the ideal of being as a man, of a man, like a man, you're a respecter of person in and of yourself on that. Because you're saying, you know, women are better than men in their own self. Or men that look down on women, you're saying that you're better than they are. You know, or the color of someone. If you're white and you think all other races, you know, are inferior to you, you're a respecter of person. If you're black and you think all other races look down on you or you look down on them, you're a respecter of persons. Or if you're, you know, a certain brown or tan, Muslim or whatever, and you think all these other people, you hate them, that's still a respecter of person. God is not a respecter of person. God doesn't care what color you are. He doesn't care how tall you are. He doesn't care how big around you are or how thin you are. He doesn't care what color hair you've got, what color eyes you've got. He doesn't care how much money you've got. He does care if you're living a holy and righteous life, though. He does care about that, being like unto him. But if we're going to say we have a God-likeness, then we better make sure we cut out all prejudice, racist, and part of us, period. We cannot be a respecter of any individual. And you better tack your own self on that. Pride, you know, God says he hates pride. You know, if you're a proud individual, you are a respecter of person. You're a respecter of yourself over everybody else in this world. I think more of myself than I do anybody else. I'm the most important. I'm going to take care of number one first. That means I respect myself better than I do anybody else. That means I respect myself more than I do my wife, my boys, my family, my fellow brothers and sisters in Christ. I'm a respecter of persons. God isn't. God isn't a respecter of persons. That's why Christ was able to take and say, okay, I'm going to lower myself down to be as a man, to live as a man, to die for all of us. Because he isn't a respecter of persons, including his own self. God is also kind, tender, and compassionate. And we've got to add that to ourselves. We have to. We got to show kindness. We got to be tender. We got to be compassionate. Ladies, that comes a lot easier for you than it does for us men. Y'all have got that built in. That's part of that special being that God has created you and made you for, is to have kindness and tenderness and compassion for like your children, for your mate, for your family, to show that tenderness to one another. Us men, we're a little more rough and gruff, and you know, and it is much harder for us to be kind and tender and compassionate. But God is. God is kind. He is tender to us, and he is very compassionate to us. And like I said, I've got verses coming. You know, he's willing to show such love and mercy and tenderness to all of us. But do we ever show that to others? Is that a part of who we are? Is that something that we exude? You know, someone says, you know, like unto me, like, you know, I'm a big guy. It's really, you say, yeah, he's a big brute of a guy. I wouldn't want to mess with him. But would it be said the other way? You know, he's such a big teddy bear. You know, when I was teaching over in the classroom, the teacher next door to me, he actually heard me say it to my students. You know, I said, you know, I'm an easygoing guy. I said, I'm like a big cuddly teddy bear. But I said, you also need to understand, if you don't do what I ask, I can turn into the big grizzly bear. I said, he's not so tender and kind, you know. But, you know, it's what we're supposed to be. If we were showing a God likeness, then, yeah, people would see us also as kind, tender, and compassionate. Let's look at some verses, because it's one thing for me to say it. It's another thing to take it from the Word of God. In the prayer this morning, you know, Evan mentioned that I just bring what the Scriptures say. So yeah, for me to sit here and give you a whole list of things without backing it up would be wrong. Psalms 145 and verse 17. The ideal of God, of Christ, you know, and so forth. The Lord is righteous in all his ways and holy in all his works. And if we're going to have a God likeness, that's it. That's what we got to say we are. We are righteous in all of our ways. We are holy in all of our works. And then we've got the likeness of God. That's going to take some work, y'all. You know, but you know, everything we've mentioned so far, I've told you, it's not something you can say, okay, Brother Cox, I've got that done this week. I left out of here Sunday and I come back today and I've got it accomplished. No, it's not going to happen that quick. You can start on it today. You can make sure if there's things in your life that you say is not righteous, they're not holy, they're not correct, you can start cutting those things out, removing them, and getting away from them. But you're not going to fix everything and just say, I've got that in place. I'm righteous and holy now. You know, but there's a lot of people in the world, they think that. Call upon the name of the Lord, and all of a sudden you're just accepted unto God in all things. No, it's going to take more than that. Psalms 111 and verse 9. He sent redemption unto his people. He hath commanded his covenant forever. Holy and reverent is his name. I'm going to use this in a couple ways. The ideal of showing kindness, compassion, you know, sympathy, being tender. He sent redemption unto his people. You can't have more mercy and kindness and tenderness than to want to save people. You know, and that's why it says holy and reverent is his name. You know, when people think of us, they need to think that's a holy individual. They're going to do what's right. Psalms 145 and verse 21, my mouth shall speak the praise of the Lord, and let all flesh bless his holy name forever and ever. You know, when we talk of God, we have to talk of him being holy. When people talk of us, they need to think of us as being holy. That is a righteous individual. That is a godly man. That is a godly woman. As in, we're going to do what's right, holy and righteous individual. Then we've got God likeness. Acts 10 and verse 34. Then Peter opened his mouth and said, of a truth, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. We mentioned that this morning in our Bible class. You know, Peter was shown a dream, because at this time he still had, you know, these reservations about the Gentiles. And, you know, it was the cloth that was dropped down. It had all the different forms of animals. And he said, arise, eat. And he's like, no, Lord, you know, I've never had anything that was, you know, unclean. And he said, don't you call what I've created unclean. And he's talking about people in this sense. That's what he was driving home to Peter. I have sent my son down upon this earth for all of mankind. You know, and I just had that whole speech about, you know, being a respecter of person. Peter says, I perceive that God is no respecter of person. We're all equal in his sight. He loves us all equally. Ephesians 4 and verse 32. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. So, you know, the ideal, you know, of us being kind and tender, compassionate. And he says, even as God really has done that for us. You know, how can we say we're a godly individual and receive the blessings of the tender mercy of God and not be willing to extend a tender, compassionate hand to our fellow man that Christ died for as well? In conclusion, as we wrap up, godliness is far more than just saying I'm doing good, or I attend service, or I'm a religious person. Now, the definition, like from Google or dictionary.com or Webster's or something like that, they really leave you with that impression. More the ideal of just being a righteous, good individual. But it's so much more than that. It means you're doing everything you can to pattern your mind, heart, words, and actions after that of God. And that's a lot to take in. Think about that. The all-powerful, the almighty God that we're taking and transforming ourselves to be like unto him. And then we've added godliness to our lives. You are focused on becoming a likeness unto God. And the last point I want to leave with that being the one that is focused on becoming the likeness of God will be the individual that can bring glory unto him. You know, when Christ, you know, talks about, I have glorified thy name, I think that's what he's getting across. Upon this earth, I have shown the likeness of God. And we could back up like into John, the readings of John there, where he talks about no one has known God, but if you've known me, then you've known the Father. And how can he say that? Why can he say that? Because the actions, his words, his deeds, the tender, the kindness, the compassion, everything about him, everything that he showed man while upon this earth was a demonstration of God. And that is what we got to be. So you can see when I said, you know, like lesson-wise, the magnitude, I don't think I can cover it. It's a big thing. It's a big thing to add. This morning, if you've never obeyed the gospel, you have not got on the path of adding godliness because you've not even accepted the gifts of God. You've not, you know, accepted the redemption, the salvation of God. You've not accepted the mercy that God has shown upon all mankind, the love that he has demonstrated unto us, because you are not even willing to become obedient unto him. Or maybe you have obeyed the gospel, but you turn back unto the world. You've left the life of servitude unto him to serve self and to serve other things. Then this morning, decide to make that right. If it's a private thing, make it known to God privately that you are changing those things, you are leaving those things, and you are going to serve him faithfully from now on. If it's an open public thing, then make it known publicly that you are leaving those things and ask forgiveness for it. This morning, we're happy to help if you'll come forward as we stand and sing.